Hello and welcome to the Transformational Healers Summit for Helping Professionals. I'm Ariana Gray, and we're here talking to the experts to break through burnout, give your gifts, and love your life. It's my real pleasure to be talking today with Tina Stromstead, PhD. Tina is a Jungian psychoanalyst, board-certified dance movement therapist, and somatic psychotherapist with 40 years of experience as a clinician, trainer, and educator. She was co-founder of the Authentic Movement Institute in Berkeley and currently teaches at the C.G. Jung Institute in San Francisco and the Depth Psychology Somatics Doctoral Program at Pacifica Graduate Institute. Tina's passion is engaging creative methods for healing and growth, reclaiming body wisdom, and indwelling with nature and living a life of soul. Her interest in cross-cultural dimensions of the healing process has led her to teach at universities and healing centers across the world. Tina has been featured in the Routledge International Handbook of Embodied Perspectives in Psychotherapy and in the Journal of Dance and Somatic Practices. So, I don't know about you, but I can get really stuck in my head sometimes. And that's why I was so excited to have Tina on this summit. She is someone who is connecting body and soul in herself and her work. And in our interview today, you're going to get clarity about how you can do this too, as well as understanding how the body and movement are gateways to insight and imagination. Tina, welcome.
Thank you so much. Thank you, Ariana. I'm delighted to be part of this gathering of people, professionals, all of us who are interested in healing, which I think is just about all of us on the planet.
Well, that's really true. Later, too, we're going to talk about this great gift that Tina has created for our listeners to experience how movement can impact you. But for right now, let's just dive into the conversation. Tina, tell me some about your work and your passions.
Oh, thank you. Well, I'm interested basically in the experience of the embodied soul, in helping people integrate body, psyche, spirit, soul, to become a more whole, integrated and authentic person. Jung, C.G. Jung, the Swiss psychoanalyst, called that individuation, becoming more fully who you are, who you're meant to be, and what resources and elements and experiences can support that. So that has many aspects to it, and all of us are interested in different things. Our own life path often brought us to what those are, what we ourselves needed, which I think is part of the beauty of your summit, you know, really engaging people around some of those questions, which are, you know, at once personal and collective. And so for me, as you mentioned in the introduction, I'm a Jungian psychoanalyst. So Jung's work with the deep unconscious, with myth, with the sacred, with dreams, those elements were important to me from early childhood. And I can come back to that a little bit later, but integrating those elements, working with the deep unconscious, not only with issues that are stressful or uppermost in the moment, which are important, and that's how symptoms often show a kind of troubling imbalance that's deeper than what's showing on the surface. Let's say what bubbles up on the skin is trying to be an indication of something that's happening closer to the body core, perhaps. Or what it is you're struggling with in that moment can be a kind of gateway to attending to something that goes back to earlier experiences where patterns got laid down in the family of origin or in the village, the community that you grew up in, the time in history that we grew up in, and what's influencing us in the current zeitgeist, the spirit of the times. So the Jungian analytic work is part of it. I'm also a board-certified dance movement therapist, so I work very much with the integration of movement into verbal work. So dance therapy is a way of engaging movement to promote, help build, sustain, explore, express emotional, social, cognitive, and physical integration in the person, in families, and in groups. And that's used in lots of different settings, you know, with people in who are working with severe mental disorders of various kinds, struggling with things in hospitals, to rehab, to recovering from medical kinds of issues, education and forensic settings, nursing homes, daycare centers, children, disease prevention, you know, bullying, shyness, depression, anxiety, all kinds of things that we as humans struggle with at different times, or our children or our elders. So it's a way of engaging the body to help the person connect more deeply with what they're really feeling and what they're sensing in the body, so that they don't go numb or freeze or just want to run, but they can actually listen to the body as a kind of guide or compass that tells them, oh, this is what I'm sensing. This is what I'm feeling. Here are some images that are coming to me to try to frame or reflect my inner experience. Here are some dreams that are coming to me to try to help me see or outpicture my inner situation, to help guide me in making better life decisions and in discovering what our own soul's journey is, what our own path is, and how that may be quite different from other people's, no matter what the culture is telling us we should be or should do or should look like, or the kind of work we should have, even if it may not really be who we are. So that's dance therapy, which includes authentic movement, a Jungian form of dance therapy, body-soul rhythms, which is something that I learned from Marion Woodman, who's a Jungian analyst in Canada, and her colleagues, Ann Skinner, Mary Hamilton. I can come back to that. That's very integrative. So we work with dreams and Jung's theory as a kind of map of the soul to try to help us understand the deep descent processes people can go through, and when they're getting closer to something inside and not just adapting, so to speak, become more free, to free up those energies through movement and dance, and then to receive the dreams that come, these reports from the interior, and make masks out of a dream figure that we need to or want to get to know better, a part of ourselves that we've repressed or that we haven't developed yet. So I love integrating movement with regular verbal psychotherapy that brings in the person's family of origin and their current relationship patterns, things that they're struggling with, because we tend to come up with the same themes or wrestle with similar things until we can work that through. We keep choosing the same romantic partners in a certain kind of way, you know, who hail back often to earlier dynamics that we had with one or both parents or sibling or something like that. So that moved then into teaching and running trainings and things for therapists and graduate students who wanted to go into the healing professions. And then something I call dream dancing, which is working with dreams not only through mental associations, you know, with words, which can keep you a little more in your ego mind or a little more in thinking, a little more removed from your direct experience in the body. Mm-hmm. But dream dancing works with dreams in the body. And more I'm interested in alchemy or embodied alchemy, which is a really ancient, you know, cross-cultural map of transformation that can give us clues for things that are helpful today. So that may sound like a lot of things, but when you are working with someone and something arises in them, it's very beautiful and important, I think, to be able to be flexible and responsive as a therapist or workshop leader. I know you know this too. Mm. So that you can work verbally, perhaps, or you can let the body begin to speak and come into the foreground, the movements that are actually going on while they talk. or the way they're holding their breath, or the way they blush, or speed up, or get stuck, the way the hands are trying to maybe show you something that's happening inside that they don't yet have words for, or maybe the opposite of what they're feeling. You know, sometimes people say, yes, I know, that would be good for me to do. Mm-hmm. And they're nodding no with their head. No, I don't want to do that. You know, or the opposite. I shouldn't do that. It'll be a waste of my time. I won't generate income. It's not what my family thought would be best for me. You know, what have you. But as they speak about what they're not supposed to be doing, their breath deepens. My breath deepens. They warm up, their eyes begin to sparkle, they get more animated, and I say, well, I know we shouldn't be talking about this.
but
just for a moment, if we could let your body speak and just see what it has to say. Mm-hmm. And then it might turn into moving in space, or I might support them with a selection of music, whether it's something gentle, you know, it's just a seed that's beginning to emerge, or something more assertive or passionate, you know, with African drums or whatever it may be. So it can take a lot of different forms and then move into drawing sometimes to see. You can make more visible what's in your body, what's a little less visible in the body, and then relate to the drawing, what you notice, or write, or work with dreams.
But so I notice as you're talking about this, I mean, as you talk about this, I notice my body's relaxing and I'm imagining moving and drawing and, you know, listening to music. It just is delightful to hear. You had mentioned briefly something about your childhood, and that made me curious. How did you get into this specific field?
Yeah, thank you. Well, I think there were a lot of things about it. I was a dancer, and I am a dancer. I think all children are dancers. Sometimes it's not particularly recognized, or we might be told, you know, to stop fidgeting or something like that. You know, school tends to begin to kind of control or try to contain the body. And if there's a lot of hyperactivity and it's hard to focus, that's understandable to try to find a way to help that. To engage the child. In my case, I really needed and wanted to dance, and I was very interested in the truth of the body and how it was trying to communicate. And so a particular memory comes to mind, and that is of sitting at the dinner table with my parents and siblings. My parents were intellectuals. They were very interested in what was going on in the world and politics and literature and so forth. And I'm so glad for that, because those are continued passions of mine. However, as they talked, I got more interested in what was going on underneath the table. You know, so, which is also sort of the child's world, you know, how they and the animal world, where the instincts are more vital and alive. And so what I noticed is that when people were being reasonable or talking about certain kinds of things, they might be twisting their napkin or fidgeting or trying to comfort their feet by putting one on top of the other, or kind of pawing the ground as if they'd just as soon get away from the table. So I got more interested in what was going on underneath the table, because I could track what was being said, but it was those untold stories that the body was trying to tell, that felt so true to me, so innocently trying to express themselves. And so I got interested in how the body was trying to tell the story in a different kind of fresh way. So I would finish dinner, do the dishes, one of my jobs, and then I would go out into the alfalfa field across the street and dance, you know, under the, in the sunlight, in the moonlight, you know, depending on when it was, and see the sky, smell the fresh vegetation, be there with the animals, and turn in my body and feel the movement that wanted to express itself and come to a place of centeredness and grounding, a kind of stillness, you know, within the dance, to come back to my own way of knowing, my own body wisdom that could let me know more about what was going on in the family and what was going on in me and how I needed to proceed and tend to my feelings, my own truths. So that, I mean, just briefly then, I ended up teaching dance and noticing movements that were trying to come out of the students. They would be doing movements that I would teach them, whether it was modern dance or different kinds, and everybody moves slightly differently. You know, even if we're all doing the same movement, I know you're a dancer also, and even if we don't call ourselves a dancer, we're all dancing.
Right.
If we're breathing, we're moving. That's chi moving through the body. So I got more interested in the soul trying to express itself through the differences in people's movement, rather than all of us having to do it the same. What were those tiny differences, those cracks in the form where something spirited and unique for that person was trying to come through? And so I would just try to hold that, hold space open for that, and witness, be with, encourage what was trying to express itself. And then people would start telling me their life stories. And I think given a chance, the soul wants to tell its story and wants people to hear and be interested and connect at that deep level or get some help with something troubling. So I thought, I need more psychological chops. So I went back and did my master's and my PhD and then my postdoc at the Jung Institute. But first I did volunteer work in place called McLean's. It's a hospital in Massachusetts where I was living, working with people in the hospital, experimenting with movement and art, poetry, taking them into nature, and just seeing how it could help ground them, center them, come more alive again, help connect with each other more safely, you know, so they were more refreshed and explorative interactions with others and expansion in their movement range, their emotional expressive range. And then I was invited to start teaching and so forth, and began to work with people more privately after working in psychiatric hospitals and running a mental health clinic and things like that, which taught me a lot about the range of human experience, you know, the range of what we can feel and what we struggle with and what we need help with and what our unique contributions can be.
You know, I'm really moved at the image of you as a little girl, like listening and peeking under the table at the same time and, you know, watching this language, this almost secret language of the body. And then that you, even back then, you know, at a time that so many of us are feeling awkward or trying to fit in, that you had enough trust in yourself to go across the street and to dance in the moonlight or the sunlight with the alfalfa. I love that self-trust and trust of your body. And clearly that has been a through line that has moved you through your own life and through all of your work, that deep trust of the body.
Thank you. It's true. And I really deeply believe it's possible, you know, for all of us that we come in with this tremendous innocence. I mean, unless there's a lot of birth trauma and we need more help. But even then, I think we can recover, you know, our deep human nature. One of the wonderful things about neuroscience now and attachment theory is that they're saying in many ways it's never too late, that there's a lot of plasticity in the brain, that we can form new nerve pathways if we understand the kind of support we need, a certain level of safety, certain kinds of resources. You know, the way a tiny seed goes in the ground and the ground needs certain kinds of nutrients and minerals, and then it needs water, and it needs just the right amount of sunlight, you know, to grow and really flower. I feel we are like that. So it's finding out what's needed with each person, which is there's some very deep human needs that we all share, you know, from the beginning of time, the archetypal universal dimension, which nourish, you know, which is true across cultures as I work with people in different parts of the world. And then there are cultural expressions, which are unique, things that the culture gives them, dance rituals, ways of eating and breaking bread together. You mentioned when we initially talked, a way of honoring the Sabbath or a sacred time, whatever any spiritual tradition calls it. You know, sacred time, that's time out of time and space where you're just quiet with yourself and you listen. And our own personal rituals, the things that we adopt that we need for our own self-care so that we can stay connected to what's most soulful, so we're able to help other people. Because otherwise we're bringing a lot of our own dysregulated, undigested material into the session with people. And none of us are perfect, thank God. We're human beings. So doing what we can to tune our instruments, so to speak, just like they do before a concert, you know, the musical instrument of the body with all of its different levels of vibration and rhythms and things like that, and how we do that so we can really meet another person and receive what it is that they're offering, what they know about it and what they don't know about it yet over time, and have the resonators in our own body to receive them and find ways to respond that don't bring in judgment or too much interpretation, you know, that leave them more free to express themselves and what's trying to come forward that may not be formed yet, or maybe old patterns that they feel trapped in. And all those are mapped into the body.
As you're describing this, I'm feeling this lovely sense of freedom around having my own needs. You know, I mean, the image of a seed actually needing things to grow. You know, I think somewhere along the line, I picked up this idea that certainly a part of me did, that I'm supposed to be needless and wantless and supposed to be able to, right, you know, perform and produce forever without stop and without needs. And this image of the seed actually to grow does need specific things, and also the, you know, instruments tuning up before the concert, right? Of course they do that. We all actually, the audience files in and even listens to them doing those strange sort of squeaky sounds and dissonant sounds in order to get ready. You know?
Right. We're included in that. It's a great reminder when they share that with us. Here you are, your individual self tuning your instrument, and now let's see what kind of music we can make together.
Oh, that's lovely. I'm curious, how do you do this piece of it? How do you integrate your work into your life? I mean, a part of me sort of imagines you dancing around your kitchen. Does that happen?
Yes, it does. There's your intuition. Yes, it does. Thank goodness. And I was mentioning to you earlier, I have these two cats who are very spirited. And when I start dancing, they jump up and down and they want to get involved. So this connection to the natural world. So I dance in my kitchen. I sing. I will often dance between sessions when I'm working with people in my private practice or with groups. Sometimes I'll get on the floor and I'll breathe and stretch and do yoga kinds of things, or bring my spine all along down the floor and feel the support of more of the archetypal realm, you know, the deep Mother Earth, let's say, that's just timeless. So it's not just my body that's going to be engaging. It's a connection to our deeper nature, you know, to the best of our ability to remember and connect with that. So that's there. I might go for a walk if I have an hour between meetings or a cancellation. I'll walk up the hill here where I can see three bridges in San Francisco, the Golden Gate Bridge, the Berkeley Bridge, and the bridge in the South Bay. And yeah, the hills, the sea. And I look down at my office where my house is and I go, gosh, it's so tiny. There's a much larger world out there. You know, and it gives me this larger, you know, more global perspective in a way, if you will, which working cross-culturally does as well, that there's so many ways to understand and perceive and to do things. So being in nature, engaging in the arts, keeping my own dance going, morning dream work, And if I can't, if I remember my dream, I write it down. If I'm having a hard time remembering it, I might, it's a little intimate, but I might sing it in the shower, like, what was I dreaming last night? I might start, and there's warm water melting the body, and the dream starts to tumble out because it's close to the unconscious, and that's in the body. And then I'll come out and write it down and maybe draw it or move it, work with it. If I can't remember my dream, I might just do a little bit of automatic writing, grounding, meditating, sounding between sessions. Nutrition, I have my breakfast green drink.
Yes.
You know, with kale, spinach, protein powder, yogurt. Yoga in the body.
Yoga and yogurt.
Yes. So different kinds of things. Nature is huge for me. The plant world, the trees, the ocean. You know, you were talking earlier when we talked, you know, more personally about the beauty, the, if I can say this, the kind of, you know, powerful cactus that you have there, how strong they are and how they're hundreds of years old, and how everyone, this fragile flower will come out that's delicate and gorgeous, this combination of the temporal and the eternal. And I love that. It's everywhere all around us.
You know, as you share about how you go through your day, it makes so much sense to me. I mean, that your instrument, that is what you do your work with, needs to be cared for, and not just in a minimalistic, you know, here, have a power bar, we have to keep going kind of way.
Right, exactly.
Know? I mean, there's such a richness, there's such, even just in your way of speaking, you know, you laugh easily, but then there's also just this gentle, slow being in the present moment that makes so much sense to me, that as we serve others, as we work as helping professionals in whatever capacity, we absolutely are called to take this kind of loving, cherishing care of ourselves in order to be able to show up as our best selves and really attune to the people that we're working with.
Yes, so true. Well said.
Tina, thank you so much for taking time to talk with us today. What a balm to the soul it is just to spend some time with you. And I know that you've actually created a really lovely free gift for our listeners to be able to get more of your work, to move in this direction that we've been describing. Could you talk a little bit about what that is?
Sure. It's a webinar that I gave last month. It's about an hour long. It's packed with information. There's some Q&A and engagement and discussion with people at the end. I think that's on there too. People who called in from different countries, so they're bringing in different perspectives and some deeply human questions that we all share. So it's called Soul's Body, which is what I call the integrative work that I do. Healing the body, psyche, soul split through conscious embodiment. And so I talk about what is the body, psyche, soul split and how it gets going, how we in some ways leave the body, how we can re-inhabit the body, a lot of things that can help with conscious embodiment, a lot of the history of the field of somatics, authentic movement, dance movement therapy, Jungian work, different pioneers. And then I talk about a woman that I worked with in my private practice and the struggles she had and how we found our way together through really listening to what she was bringing in to find a way to help her with her healing and some beautiful changes that she was able to go through as she became more empowered and more expressive and more real. So I'm happy to share that with people.
That's a beautiful resource. And as you're listening, you can jump on that right now. Underneath the interview that you're listening to, there's a link. You just click on that and opt in, and Tina will send you this webinar. It just sounds like a wonderful step in the direction of caring for ourselves, just to get the webinar and to learn more, to integrate that. So please, I encourage you, as you're listening, go ahead and opt into that because you won't regret it. It will be a wonderful experience. Again, Tina, thank you so much for your time today to talk with us.
You're so welcome. I wondered if there's time to just give you a line from Marion Woodman, who was one of my teachers.
Absolutely. Please do.
Is it possible to bring that in?
Yeah.
She says, "This is your body, your greatest gift, pregnant with wisdom you do not hear, grief you thought was forgotten, and joy you have not yet known." And one more quote for you. This is from Anais Nin. She says, "And the time came when the risk to remain tight in a bud was more painful than the risk it took to blossom."
Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you very much.
We have been talking with Tina Stromstedt, PhD, co-founder of the Authentic Movement Institute in Berkeley, California. And this is a very relaxed Ariana Gray, your host for the Transformational Healers Summit for Helping Professionals. Be sure to join us for our next interview to break through burnout, give your gifts, and love your life. And remember, as you're listening to this, you really are making a difference.